morning, Your Honors. Mark Lean on behalf of Trent and Melissa Adams. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes. May it please the court, this case comes down to two simple questions. A main question: did the trial court improperly rule as a matter of law that that the warranties in this case began to run at the time of the court decree on adverse possession as opposed to the time of conveyance? A second question that I don't want to belabor much time on, but I do want to mention briefly at the end, is under the doctrine of mutuality of remedy espoused by Fairway Estates versus Unknown Heirs, are the Adams entitled to their attorney's fees? In terms of the first point, a simple issue to get out of the way is the warranty of Sisen. The case law, double L, corpus juris secundum, is absolutely clear. This can only be breached, if at all, at the time of conveyance. Because what you're saying is you are seized. You have the right to possession of the property, the right to title of the property. And if at the moment that you convey it, you don't, you have breached that warranty. That is when the statute of limitations begins to run. It is, as they call, a present warranty. The bigger question, the one that I really think drives this appeal, is as to the future warranties. Quiet enjoyment, which may be synonymous or identical or nearly identical with the covenant of warranty, and the right of defense, the covenant of defense, which we believe, if you look at the statute, is really a species of this future warranty of quiet enjoyment.
There's another warranty, a warranty against encumbrances, which neither party seemed to talk about. That's
correct. There's no prescriptive easement issue in this case, no easement question. So encumbrances, I guess you could argue an encroachment would be an encumbrance if it hadn't vested. But here the issue is title. So I don't think that is at issue. However,
there's no contention that warranty was violated.
No, but if it was, it's also a present warranty, as the warranty of Sisen is, which goes to title, and so it also the statute of limitations would run necessarily from the time of conveyance. Now, in terms of these future warranties, after over a year of litigating this issue.
Well, so you didn't argue that, though, so this is a new.
That's right. If somehow they were to come up and bring that up,
for the first time, an oral argument.
Exactly.
Okay, thank you.
After over a year of litigating the issue, the Rose finally admit in their response brief at page 8-9 the clear and unassailable point that Whatcom Timber creates an exception to the general rule of when future warranties are breached. The general rule is, well, when you're evicted, you come into possession, you take the property, someone comes in later and says, this is ours, it gets litigated, and once the decree is entered, that's when the statute of limitations begins. But what Whatcom Timber and McDonald and the weight of the case authority, even out of state, I believe, if you look at the ALR, is that Whatcom Timber provides if there's a person who has superior title and possession existing at the time of the conveyance, that starts the statute of limitations. So then what they do is they pivot and they assert, well, the issue is really what constitutes sufficient possession, beyond being a brand new issue here.
So no question about superior title.
There was briefly an issue because the trial court had said, oh, well, I find that they perfected title at the time of the decree. And in the trial court, there was sort of that argument. But I think the Hornley case, and I think even in Whatcom Timber, I think that is an adverse possession case. But
so the 10 years running perfects title. You don't need a piece of paper from a courthouse.
That's right. The case law indicates that a adversely possessed title is the same as a title by grant or deed. They're identical, and so that's sort of a red herring, this idea of whether it's perfected or not. And I believe...
Possession is the only issue.
I believe possession is the only issue, which then would raise the question, okay, is there possession? And I think the record makes clear, absolutely, that there was possession. Now, there's a assertion.
Doesn't it have to be apparent, though? I mean, it's sort of obvious that there's no dispute about possession?
I think the possession has to be actual or constructive. And the reason I'm adding in constructive is, let's say that I had a partial fence. I think you could say, okay, well, that gave you notice as to the whole property line. But what I want to get to here, and what I think is important, is if you look at the briefing, there's this indication, oh, well, you know, we got a survey done. It didn't show anything. And they cite clerk's papers at 282. That's actually a different survey. But the survey, I believe, is in the record. And they're right. It doesn't show along their north property line anything. But it also says this doesn't necessarily show all encumbrances. And I believe that's because, and I think it's in the record, that's because the issue was on their south property line. There was a rockery, and it was showing that. But more importantly, in their amended complaint at clerk paper 32, their fifth allegation is, in 2010, plaintiffs had the row parcel surveyed by Thomas Waldenorp, PLS. The record of survey is recorded under King County Recorder's number 2010-0504-900016. The survey revealed an encroachment along the northern boundary of the row parcel by defendants along the common boundary between the row parcel and the Klein parcel.
And is that encroachment the full extent of your client's claim to the disputed property?
Well, that's an interesting question. What we have in terms of what the actual evidence of...
You only have 46 seconds.
Well, fortunately, I'll have 3 minutes, but I'll start going through this because I think it's important. There's the issue of what's in the clerk's papers. There's also the testimony of Joel Klein that he's maintained a residential yard that extends to the location of the current fence. That was in the record. He testified that the last few feet of his greenhouse were on the property.
Right?
And all of this is in the record.
Oh, I understand that, but are these facts about which there is no dispute?
I haven't seen anything raised. Now, there is a procedural question, and I don't want to hide it from the court in terms of it was brought as a Rule 12 motion. I think it's pretty clear the court converted it because there's all of these issues outside the record. And it would be on the duty of the Rose to assert prejudice, and I don't think they've shown it.
Your claim would be that they haven't raised any genuine issue disputing the facts that you just represented.
And then I'll finish them off. But, yes, that there's no dispute as to possession, and anything that's raised now is just trying to get through the motion and get another bite.
Save it unless you want to go into your three.
I don't.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is John O'Rourke, and I represent plaintiffs, third-party plaintiffs, and the respondents herein, Jeffrey and Rebecca Rowe. The Rowes argue for the application of the general rule regarding this case, regarding this issue, which is set forth in Foley versus Smith. As a general rule, the warranty of joint possession is not breached until the buyer experiences an actual or constructive eviction by one who holds paramount title.
Why doesn't Whatcom apply?
Whatcom does not apply because appellants have failed to prove that second part of the Whatcom timber test. That is, to establish the exception under the general rule under Whatcom timber, the covenantee has to prove that at the time the deed was executed, that the grantee could not be put into possession. So that's the Whatcom timber case. So that has been further interpreted by Stobuck and Weaver, professors Stobuck, to mean that where the adverse possessor hadn't filed suit, hadn't perfected the claim, as Mr. Klein had not in this case. So he's holding based on an adverse claim. He's not obtained record title. The breach of the covenant, this is the quiet enjoyment covenant, does not occur until there's some kind of physical entry or disturbance by a third party.
Well, you've cited Stobuck, and we haven't always agreed with Professor Stobuck. But would you agree that you have established title by satisfying the requirements of the adverse possession doctrine for the requisite period of time without having yet obtained a court decree? The Washington case is so provided.
Well, my clients were disappointed.
Right.
Well, I don't think there's enough evidence to establish an adverse claim because...
Okay, well, that's a separate question. My question to you first is, if there's undisputed evidence that establishes all the elements of adverse possession for the requisite time, mm-hmm. is that established title? That can be answered yes.
Well, it's
you're going to get a chance to answer
subject to confirmation by the court. Can you go out and get title insurance on an adverse possession claim?
Your answer is
you
yes,
can't.
That person does have title. Then the next question I have for you is, did you present evidence that raises any issue of fact about possession for the requisite period of time?
Well, yes, we did. First of all, okay, so my clients moved in 2008. So the Kleins, or the adverse possessors, purchased in 1974. They built their house. The house next door, which became my client's house, wasn't built until 1980. And at that point, the predecessor of the Adamses and my clients put up a trellis in the disputed area. So we had, I thought, evidence, strong evidence of a legal dispute within the disputed area. Now, that might have only shifted the time frame forward a little bit, but I think the court granted summary judgment, the trial court, on adverse possession, which is very unusual, just because there wasn't any sort of direct contradiction by my clients, because they weren't there to sign off on it. I did have the declaration of Patricia Bradshaw, who said, yeah, I set up a trellis there. There was a line of trees.
I understand that the trellis comes after the 10 years?
I have that at 1985. But in any event, in my own humble opinion, that's an open question. But those facts, the adverse possession facts, are not really the facts that are relevant on this warranty question. The question is whether there was any disturbance of my client's possession post 2008. So they buy in 2008, they get a survey in 2010, and yes, my complaint says that the survey, or that there was some encroachment in 2010. In fact, the uncontroverted evidence was that the first dispute my clients had with the Kleins was in 2014. They were trying to exercise possession over what they had purchased, and then there was a dispute, and that led.
What does the record tell us who'd been in possession up to 2014?
Well, I mean, the court order granting summary judgment,
what's the evidence? Is there evidence of your client being in possession of any of the disputed property before they made their demand in 2014?
Well, I don't think either party knew there was that the deed warranty and the
That's
line of possession were different.
Question is, somebody's in possession of property, either the neighbor or your client. And I'm hearing from the other side that the undisputed evidence is they're in possession. And I'm asking you, is there evidence to the contrary?
Well, my clients attempted to assert. They sent a letter to Klein saying,
that's
hey.
That's not being in possession. I can write a letter telling my next-door neighbor that I own his front lawn. That doesn't put me in possession of it.
Well, but I think the court is focusing on the wrong side of this question. It's what did the Kleins do to disturb my client's possession and their quiet enjoyment? That's the true breach.
Well, if they're occupying it, aren't they disturbing your client's possession of it?
Well, when we use the term occupancy, you should understand this: the depth of this property is 140 feet. There's a 30-foot long, only 30 feet of that is fenced, right immediately adjacent to my client's house. There's a line of trees between the deed line and the fence. There's a shrub. So it's open. 110 feet of this boundary is open. You can do anything you want in there.
What was being done in there?
Well, my clients, like I say, they got the survey, and I think they were,
What was being done? Was there lawn there? Were there flowers there? Was there a rose tree there? What was being done in that area?
Well, in the front of the property, it was just a rhododendron and some shrubs.
You raked up the leaves in the fall when the rhododendron dropped them.
Well, my clients testified that they did some yard work. The clients testified they occasionally did yard work. But the Klein's adverse possession claim was supported only by Mr. Klein's sworn declaration,
but
no maps, but no pictures.
But if it was evident to your clients that the Kleins were on that piece of property and controlling that piece of property, the statute's running from that point, isn't it?
Well, at the earliest, okay, the 2010, so this deed warranty claim, I think, was filed at the end of 2015. The first evidence they knew, and actually the 2010 survey doesn't even show an encroachment. So they didn't have any knowledge of an encroachment.
But when they went out and looked at that property, what did they see? Did they see the driveway? Did they see the the Kleins, I think some outhouse or some sort of house that
had there was a greenhouse way back in the greenhouse corner that was maybe a foot or two over the shrubbery. See, because it wasn't fenced, you couldn't see where the shrub was in front relative to the line. During my
the law requires that you have knowledge of the line, or just that somebody's occupying the property.
Occupying, they have to assert, and again, I'm going to.
I understand there were two elements, title and possession.
And assertion of paramount possession is also a Whatcom.
But isn't possession an assertion of the right? Generally, you don't occupy property, you don't assert a right to occupy.
I'm going to tell you, Your Honor, possession sufficient to prove an adverse claim and possession sufficient to put someone on notice of an adverse possession claim are two entirely different things. We had an open, unfenced area. There's no way. And the Adamses themselves in the Form 17 disclosure to my client stated there's no encroachments here. There's no boundary line agreements. And so my clients going in think we own this entire property. And this court, less than a year ago, in the unpublished opinion of Majared and Liu versus Walden, December 19, 2016, 7454681, ruled with, in this case, with Stobuck and Weaver, in Washington, a disturbance of possession may occur not only by a third person's physical entry, but by constructive eviction by proving the superior right. So this court has basically held that the breach of this covenant doesn't occur until there's some kind of physical entry. And so in this case, it's unfair to hold my clients to a standard where the breach occurs at conveyance because arguably nobody knows there's an adverse possession claim in place. There's certainly no evidence.
If the clients had a survey done before purchase, would they have known at the time of purchase?
Probably wouldn't. If it was the survey they got in 2010, they wouldn't have found out. But that is a burden the court should not put on parties purchasing real estate. That is that you, because the only way you're going to detect an unknown, unproven breach of a warranty of or covenant of seizin is by getting a survey prior to purchase. There'd be no other way since Klein hadn't asserted the claim and it wasn't really apparent on the ground. And this case hasn't been litigated, so there's very few facts in support of the adverse possession claim in this case. So we ask the court to uphold the trial court. Thank you.
May it please the court, I believe there was a citation to the Majared case, which I believe Your Honor cited on to. And
the Skagit County case?
I think so. It's the driveway case.
Yeah.
And what's important there is it talks about some sort of physical disturbance. That's what's required, some sort of physical disturbance on the property. Although there is.
And so what's the record here tell us about the physical disturbance on the property to let people know that your client was occupying it?
Not my client. The clients.
The clients.
So at clerk's papers 28 and also 53, Klein, since purchasing our property in 1974, we have maintained a residential yard that extends to the location of the current fence as extended between us and the neighboring property.
So does that mean the rhododendrons and whatever else was planted there?
I believe the Kleins claim the rhododendron. On clerk's paper 74 to 75, Joel Klein testified that the last few feet of his greenhouse, which was built prior to the time of the Adamses owned the property, encroaches onto the property. That seems like a pretty physical disturbance to me. Clerk's paper 84, Joel Klein testified that his claim to adverse possession was also based on an existing septic leach field that was inspected every 3 years.
Cases where they said you don't have adverse possession with a septic field because you can't see it. It's underground.
Well, but the issue is there's a person coming every 3 years to inspect it, and it's consistent.
Once every 3 years doesn't really give somebody much notice that someone else wants to use your property.
Fair, but it's not the only point. Clerk's papers 86. The Rose conceded in response to the Klein summary judgment motion that the client's car, when parked, may extend half a car length onto their property. Minor, I agree. But again, we're talking about physical disturbance. 6. The Rose conceded in response to the client's summary judgment motion that the greenhouse, quote, encroaches over the deed line, unquote. Any survey that is trying to show encroachments would show that happening.
Well, it's just that encroachment, but as I understand it, the volume of property is much greater than the footprint of the greenhouse.
It's more than the footprint of the greenhouse. There's an issue of it extending to the fence. And the court found that all of that area was adversely possessed, and Joel Klein said he was out there maintaining that yard. Now, I will concede openly, you know, I haven't been trying to make their case. So if there was something in the record that showed that the Rowes were doing something on that property, I would have expected them to assert it. They have not asserted it. However, if Your Honor, actually, just to go back to the end, please take a look at Fairway Estates and note that the statute in that case is a one-way attorney fee clause, one-way, that only one of the parties could have gotten attorney's fees. And the Rowes here claimed their right to attorney's fees, that they could get it, only they could get it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That concludes our last.